Shanti. Those of you who would have understood the song that we just heard would know that it said, put on the wings of enthusiasm and keep flying. So the flying stage, the stage of being high. People like to be joyful, full of happiness, light, with a conviction that whatever you set your hand to, it will certainly be successful, and you enjoy doing it, and you don't think about any little irritations that come in the way. They are literally nothing more than a passing fly or mosquito that you just whack away. So this is really what we're talking about this morning. We heard Baba's Murli about adorning oneself with the wings of enthusiasm and zeal and staying in the flying stage. So one thing is we fly, and then the other thing is we fall down. Or we get into a tailspin and we go into some kind of a depression. So we are in some ways, especially when we come into Gyan, somewhat bipolar, or otherwise known as manic depressive. Is it true? A few people are very stable, but mostly the aim and purpose of doing Raj Yoga is to become stable and in a state of equilibrium. So most of us, I think, experience life as a combination of highs and lows. And sometimes we get very, very high over some small thing, and then there is a sort of a backlash where you become low. So we want to talk about this situation and how to bring ourselves to a stage where we take off and we go up and we keep flying and we don't come down. And I suppose Daddy Jenki and Daddy Prakash Mani and Daddy Gulzar are very good examples of this. If ever you see them, even if they're not doing anything much in particular, you detect that there is an internal joyfulness going on which is keeping them quite high. And they will break out into a very pleasurable and affectionate smile at the slightest provocation. And even if something, we may have something which we think, oh, it's so bad, you know, this thing happened or this thing didn't happen. And we have this thought, this is a very bad thing. And as soon as we have the thought that something is a very bad thing, it carries with itself a certain feeling. And if we repeat the thought, then the negative feeling is multiplied for as many times as we repeat the thought. And we can very easily generate a tailspin and fall into one of those lows. And therefore Baba has given us lots of things, so that we have plenty of arrangements within our consciousness to adjust our plane so that it gets back flying on course towards the double destination of Param Dham in a good spot, and the Golden Age also in a good spot and at the beginning. Now, in the Lokic world, or you can say the Iron Age, people get high on certain types of things. They may get high on drugs and alcohol and other mind-altering substances, and then they become addicted to that. And one of the things that happens if you become addicted to some mind-altering substance is that you need more and more of the thing to get even a little bit high, and then when the effect has worn off, your lows are very, very low. And so it's a pretty progressively miserable situation. Now, sometimes we experience, not sometimes, pretty much always, we experience that when we do service, we get happy. Is it? You experience that? I'll tell you a little story about myself, a time when I got too happy and I was very confused, and not confused, but puzzled. I said, Baba, what is this? You know, why am I so happy? And anyway, the story was that there was a car accident and one of the people was quite badly injured, and a close contact of mine, one of my sisters in Gyan from USA, and so I got the duty that you go and be there with her. And so I was there, a few other people were with me, and I decided out of completely selfish reasons that I would take the night duty and go and sit in the ICU, the intensive care unit, with her from 7 o'clock evening till 7 o'clock morning. And the reason I took that is because sitting around in the day was very boring, so I thought, let me sit around in the night and meditate and all that, and then I can rest in the day, and that would be less boring. So it was not at all anything other than selfishness. But anyway, so I sat there, and, you know, you can't really do very much when somebody's unconscious and the situation is getting worse and worse, and eventually she left the body. So I sat there for 10 nights, and I meditated, and whatever I could do, I did, but most you couldn't do too much, you just sit and meditate. And lots of other injured people came in from some car accidents or some burn or something, and then they would also die, and then another one would... So it wasn't very nice, but it was... okay, you know. And then it was the day when she left the body, and it was also the day that Baba was coming. And so when Baba is coming, we say, well, you know, I don't know, Madhuban, right? We want to be there. It's not like I'm in Ahmedabad and Baba's in Madhuban, and that's too far, you know. So this thought was there. And the other people who were with me were also having this pull to be there because Baba is coming and we want to be there and listen to the Murli. So anyway, she had left the body in the night time. And so all the funeral arrangements and bog and everything were completed by about, say, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And everything was complete. And then we said, you know, we can make it if we go now. We completed our duty. And so we drove to Abu. And we reached, on that day, Baba was giving the, speaking the Murli in Om Shanti Bhavan. So there was just enough time to shower, get fresh clothes. And as there was about three of us, we walked into the hall and Baba said, Aj. You know? And so we didn't miss anything. And then because it was the big news of the day, because it was important, and three people had been injured in there and two of them had left the body, one in the first few minutes and the other one later, And the third one is okay, very okay now. So we listened to Murali, and then we were called on stage. And Baba, and you see what had happened to me is in the car on the way to Madhuban, I thought in my Western mind or whatever, well, it's a very bad thing has happened, she died, you're going to be serious, somber, suitable mentality and attitude. And I felt this great wave of happiness. I said, what is this? This is not the occasion to be, you know, overly joyful and, you know. But it was so strong wave of happiness, I can control it. So I was sitting near the window, so I thought, I look out of the window and then nobody will see that I'm grinning from ear to ear for no very good reason. And it doesn't look good. Huh? But very difficult to hide, you know. And this is going on for, you know, 2-3 hours, just this huge tsunami of happiness, completely inappropriately. And, you know, it's not like you try to repress your happiness, but at least keep it sort of somewhat under control. Anyway, we went in front of Baba, and he looked at me, and he said, do you know why you were so happy? And my first thought was, how do you know? Obviously, he'd been with us. As he says, I'm always with you. And so sometimes we don't always feel it, but anyway, he definitely gave me to understand that bear in mind that I am always with you, so I know what's going on in your mind, feelings, activities, etc. So I looked at Baba and I said, no. And he said, well, you did service. I said, I didn't do service. I was completely selfish and I didn't do service. No, he said, you did service. I didn't do anything. I just sat there and waited for 10 nights. No, he said, you did service. And this is why you are experiencing this happiness. So, okay. But this is the thing, that we can very easily like that feeling of being very high and know that, okay, if I do service, then I'll get a feeling of great happiness. So if I do more service, then I'll get more happiness. And so we can actually find ourselves in a situation where we start to use service as a means of getting high. And we can then use that as a means of sort of avoiding the lows that happen in between. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit with you, so that we do do service, get happy, but we don't become dependent on it. Because sometimes if we say, okay, I am going to do this, and I did this, and this sense of I comes along, or we do something and we do it my way, and the people who we decide we're serving, they don't actually experience the satisfaction that we calculate that they should be getting because we're doing it for a selfish reason. You understand what I mean? So, of course, when we say, I am going to do this, and I want to do this, and nobody can get in my way because it's my thing, and it has to be my way, and these people have to love me and adore me and get served, and I will get high on that. You see, of course it doesn't work, does it? You may have experienced the temptation to do that. So we have to be careful, because Baba has said quite clearly in a different Murali that was from the last season, that if you do service but the people are not satisfied, then it's not service. So, of course, then we wouldn't get happiness. And even in this Murali that we just heard on the 31st of October, Baba said, you know, blessings. Take blessings. These are a lift. And they, of course, will add to the buoyancy that we experience in the flying stage. And it will also, this sense of blessings carries us forward, you can say, like a following wind, and lifts us up, so that even if we aren't doing anything from our own personal effort or anything like that, but the blessings of another person or other people is carrying us forward. So these two things, being an instrument for service without doing it like in a selfish way, or I have to do this and I'm the only one who's allowed to do this and you jolly well better enjoy it, that kind of thing, we wouldn't get happiness from it, and other people wouldn't get satisfied, and we wouldn't get any blessings. They would say, you know, get on with it and let us get on with our life, you know, and get off the stage. So this is really the danger. And I remember in my early days in Gyan, something that Dadi Jenki would draw our attention to quite a lot in reference to the aim of reaching a stable stage. And that was that if you take credit or you receive praise, you take it in, you take it on, somebody says, oh, you did a marvelous lecture or whatever, and you say, oh yes, of course I did. You know, there's a backlash from that, which is some other thing will happen shortly afterwards, which is, you're hopeless, you're no good, we don't like you, you get away. And then you go down into a low, because whenever we take credit for something, there's a balancing system, which means that we have to also eat humble pie for somebody saying, no, we don't want you yet, that's no good. So she would always teach us that any kind of praise or credit or anything that comes your way, be very attentive to be graceful about it, but always send it to Baba, because after all, anything good that gets done is actually Baba getting it done through one or another of us who he considers to be his instruments. And you know that there are times when you give a great class and everybody says, wonderful, marvelous, fantastic. And there are other times where you can't put two words together and they all walk out. So, if it was really I who is doing the wonderful, marvelous, fantastic one, then it should be all the time, I would say. And if it varies from being wonderful, marvelous, and fantastic to not that great or fairly ordinary, and we know that when Baba wants anyone in the audience to receive a certain something, which we don't know anything about, but he knows who he wants to hear what, when, and how, he can get one to, you know, say all the marvelous things that end up being a marvelous class. And then they say, oh yes, you did a great. And we have to say, I just sat in the chair, opened my mouth, you know, I have no idea what to say. He did. So, you please think about Baba as the source of this thing which you benefited from. In that way, we are not putting ourselves in this situation where we're using the positive to get a high, but the tax for it is that you'll also get a corresponding low, you see. So when we are operating in that way, we're basically being body conscious and we're still in the Iron Age and we're in this bipolar kind of mentality. So if you want your plane, as you know you all came by plane, to take off and fly nicely, it has to be stable, because if the plane is going like this, you feel very uncomfortable, isn't it? And it might fall down. Sometimes they do, and that's it. Om Shanti. But in order for us to fly in a stable way and for a long time and very high, there has to be this balance. And so part of the attainment of the balance is to be, or to adopt the attitude of being neutral in regard to praise and defamation, or success and failure. Adopting the wings of enthusiasm is not told to somebody who is enthusiastic. It is told to somebody who's not enthusiastic, that you please put on your wings of enthusiasm and start flying. What are you doing in this low stage? You know, someone may say to us, or we may say to ourselves, or we may hear it in the Murli. So the thing I think we can look at now is, when I am not feeling particularly enthusiastic, how do I become enthusiastic? Or what policy can I adopt in my Brahmin life, in the playing the part of an instrument and doing godly service? Because there are times when we experience that it doesn't work out. So one of the things that Baba had mentioned when he was talking with the Dadis, maybe the IT group in this last Murli, that when you hold on to your position, then the opposition is not going to give you any problem. But by holding on to your position, you remove the opposition. So I think that adopting the wings of enthusiasm and zeal is very much connected with adopting a particular position and maintaining that, and refusing to come down from that. And every BK, to a greater or lesser extent, has to take all the tests. One of the tests is, there you are on your own, you're a perfectly good person, you did everything right, followed all the principles and all that, and everybody turns against you and they say, we don't want you, get out. I don't know if you've experienced it. If you haven't yet, it will come in some form or another. And there are a few Murlis when Baba has said, suppose if the whole world gangs up against you and you are the only one, can you handle it? I see. And so in order for us to be able to answer that question honestly, it's necessary for us to have an experience of that, where all of a sudden everybody somehow gets a negative idea about you, and then they all plan to destroy you in one way or another. So there you are, you check yourself, no, I meditate every day, Amrit Vela, Nimasham Yoga, I listen to Murli, offer book, wear my white clothes, my badge, my middle parting, you know, everything is in proper order. And, you know, all of a sudden everybody thinks you're no good. So the thing is that we have a temptation, it's normal and natural, we have a temptation to think that we're good if everybody says we're good. And then if they say we're no good, then we'll have doubt in ourselves. So the test is when everything comes along to conspire, excuse me, to conspire to make you doubt in yourself, can you still keep faith in yourself? Can you still be happy? Can you still move forward, you know, and fly with the wings of enthusiasm? There was also a very recent Murali in which Baba had said, stay in the form of a blessing, I think. Stay in the form of the point. And this is also a good way to make it through different kinds of opposition. So staying in the form of the point is also holding on to your position. Sometimes we experience, someone says to you, you may be the in charge of the center, but we don't think you're much good, get out, you know. But as you may have heard a number of times, in BK, whatever part we are allocated, it's not by election or selection. But we are given a direction that you sit here and you play this part in this way, be the instrument. And so actually you do not have the right to stand down, even if everybody in the world is telling you to stand down, unless it is the person who put you there in the first place, Baba, or one of his senior instruments, who says to you, okay, now you get down off of this position and we'll give you a promotion. Because after such a thing, you always get a promotion because it's quite a big exam. So naturally, when you keep in your position, you maintain your stability and you do not take the sorrow, because this is also a form of giving sorrow. So if we take sorrow, that is also going away from our position. And if we take sorrow, that is also forgetting the reality of who we are and what we are. And taking in stuff, like we had a question when I was meeting with the group from Germany. They had asked me a question, what does it mean when Baba says, do not use the things that belong to Shudras? Do you remember that? And so it's like this. Shudra is an expression that refers to anything negative, anything body conscious, anything that is not the original stage of the soul. So if somebody says to me, we don't like you, you're no good, you know, get out of here. And I say, okay. That means I stepped down from my position, I forgot who I am, and I took them seriously. When Baba actually says that this is somebody under another influence. You remember when he told us that? Under another influence. So when somebody is under another influence and sends some negative things your way, you have the option. You can say, okay, please upset me, you know, I enjoy this. Or you can say, you know, thanks very much, but no thanks. Not buying. Not buying into it. Okay, we may have to stand stable, stand steady, be the point, stand firm, and let it do whatever it's doing for as long as it's doing it. And then we would apply the power of accommodation, the power of tolerance, but not step down from the position. I see. Because if you step down from the position, then the opposition takes over. If you don't step down from the position, then the opposition gives you a good battering, rather like a storm. Batters your house, maybe knocks down a few trees, but you stand firm in the face of one or another hurricane. And at the end of that, your faith in yourself is stable. Other people respect you because they know that you have taken a beating or a bruising. And Baba will promote you in some way or another. Because until and unless we have the experience that under fire I can stand firm, we really don't know whether we're strong or not, whether we're stable or not. So each of these tests is an extremely good circumstance for us to actually see clearly, am I strong? Am I stable? Am I balanced? Because if you're not, and you get a big tsunami of blessings, and you get pushed forward by drama or whatever, you won't be able to hold steady. You see, you wobble. So these things are very necessary. Faith in ourselves, faith in Baba, faith in drama, very essential ingredients. What Baba has told us many times about the three points. Point one, I'm the soul, dot. Point two, Baba is there, always with me. So I'm not alone. And drama, whatever it is, it's also a point. I see. Some of us had the fortune to experience personal meetings with Baba in the early 80s, 70s and 80s. And Baba used to give very empowering, but very often quite simple blessings. And I remember one time he said to me, think of the biggest thing you can think of and it will be successful. And so, what's the biggest thing I can think of? So from time to time, I will be, have completed some project or something, and then I'll think, okay, what's the biggest thing I can think of? Because Baba said it will be successful. So, different times I'll think of the biggest thing, and it'll be so big it's just impossible, completely impossible. But nice idea, you know, a dream. But then I remember, now he said, it will be successful, so let's go and do it. And so the things which Baba has said, they become like guarantees, you know. And so you have to take it. Sometimes somebody says you something negative to you, and you take it as fact. Baba says, don't do that. But what I tell you, take it as fact. I see. Another time, Baba had said to me, your name is the victorious one. So that becomes like a fact, you see, because it's said by Baba, your name is the victorious one. So, okay, then. That means any time there's any possibility of defeat, it's too bad because I'm the victorious one, so forget about defeat. It's not going to happen because the victorious one has to be victorious. So even if everything seems that it's absolutely, you know, messing up everything, but there's this guarantee, you will be victorious. So you take those things, and then you do not allow it, the things, to get you down. I remember one time I had a lot of migraine for many years, a very bad migraine. And I would always find some different medicine, any kind, you know. You go, conventional medicine doesn't do it. So you do unconventional medicine, alternative medicine, then alternative, you know. And I had one friend who would say to me, oh, you know, you just don't give up, do you? Of course not, you know. I know one day I will be headache-free. And when I started to be in Madhuban, I actually became headache-free. So, it was true. But it's like there's a, I suppose there are times when, you know, you're under some kind of pressure, then what I do, I resort to something I call the power to keep on going on. We have the eight powers, but this is a good one. The power to keep on going on, or perseverance. Just keep going. And you can make it. And I think that applying the different powers in different situations means that you actually get those powers. And Baba has often told us, no, you are given all of these things, but if you don't use it, of course, you will lose it. And so I think a very important part of keeping ourselves enthusiastic and flying with the strength and equilibrium is to interpret the different kinds of obstacles and oppositions as opportunities and teachers. So taking them in a very positive way. If we take something at face value, it means we're not using our third eye anyway. Or it means that we're still operating as an ordinary human being, rather like an iron-aged human being. There are many muralis in which Baba has said, if you're strong, Maya will come to you very strongly. So you can turn that around and say, if Maya comes to you very strongly, it means you are very strong, so get on with it, you know. You have that option. You can't say, oh, Maya comes to me very strongly, therefore it means I should lie down and die. It doesn't have to mean that. If you decide it means that, then it's a foregone conclusion. But it depends on your attitude. So, brother was telling me a few minutes ago, your altitude depends on your attitude more than your aptitude. You like that slogan? Because, of course, our aptitude is, we're not necessarily that qualified. You know, we're simple people, but we are not doing it ourselves. Baba has again and again told us, have the consciousness of being an instrument. So he has perfectly good aptitude. He's the Almighty, he's the creator of heaven, you see. So if I have to create heaven by myself, of course it's completely impossible. But if he has to create heaven and uses me as an instrument for some part of that, then I get commission. Doesn't matter about the aptitude, you see. So you get to play your part with Baba. So that's also part of your attitude. I am playing my part with Baba. I have not many capabilities, but nevertheless, I invoke him. Okay, you do whatever you want to do through me. Then that means some marvelous thing happened and I was there and I saw. I can say I did it, but I can say I was there and I saw. Yeah? Because sometimes you have to figure out a lot. Okay, Baba is doing something with me. I am the instrument of God. That's also ego, isn't it? I am the instrument of God. You are not. Only me. That's not right. So I struggle with this, you see. How do I have instrument consciousness without thinking, I am the instrument of God? You see, because somebody will say, oh, you think you're Jesus Christ or what, you know? And then they won't like that. But then I thought, okay. Okay, Baba is using me, that means he is doing it, and I'm there, so I saw. And that felt okay. Because it's not arrogant, because you're a witness, no, but you're part of it. So I play my part with Baba. He is doing something, and I was there, and I saw. And not only that, but you get commission. Commission comes in a variety of ways, and one of the ways is this happiness. And when service is done, Baba's service is done through you and you are actually being used as an instrument, very nice buoyancy occurs. And I think that having experienced a lot of the ups and downs that occur in our human life or our confluence-aged life, what our aim and object is to become, as Baba had mentioned, very much bodiless, egoless, and viceless. Nirakari, nirahankari, nirvikari. And we play with these three last words of Baba in a number of different orders and in a number of different ways. So, probably we should first become nirakari, and we have to be bodiless, we have to be soul conscious first, and then we can perhaps become nirvikari, viceless. You see, and then we become nirahankari, which is the humble stage or the egoless stage. So at every step, the ego is coming along to mess us up, And at every step, we are trying to establish our pure pride of the self, which is the should abhiman, this word, pure pride, should abhiman, as opposed to duty abhiman, duty meaning false. So the false pride is the ego, and the pure pride of soul consciousness, which sometimes you hear the expression Narayani Nasha. Have you heard that? Narayan, the intoxication of being Narayan. And we are a little worried about this word intoxication because of its association with drunkenness. But there's also a lot of references in spiritual literature and even within our own history of being in an intoxicated state. I see. Those who spent time with Brahma Baba in the physical form also speak about moments when he used this expression, Vahareme. Vahareme means how amazing it is to be me. You know, because the moment you realize who you are and what you are is amazing. I am me. That's good because you're still me, you know, for every kalpa after kalpa. So it's really amazing when you get these moments of self-recognition that I am me, and that is amazing, and you'll go into an intoxicated state and you'll fly, not because you have done anything, but because you have understood, you have recognized, and you have seen, this is me, this is who I am, the real me. That is it. The Narayani intoxication. So for Brahma Baba, as Baba said in this last Murli, only two places are fixed, the father and the mother. And all we like the daddies and we calculate is the number three, number four, number five, like this, up to eight. We have different ones. On different days. And then those who have already gone on, we may forget about them, we don't count them, then we have to count them, then there's more than eight, and it's very difficult to figure it out. But in other words, it's not fixed, you know. And even now, Baba will say, and Dadi will say, aim to be one of the eight. Okay. You know. And so one must aim high, but not just out of obedience or anything, but out of the suspicion that it is possible for there to be somebody in the eight, and my goodness, it could possibly be me if I would only see who I am. So I think the thing that makes us go down or stops us from flying is we look at our current coat, this body, leather jacket, not very good one, not very beautiful, susceptible to cold and heat and bugs and all of this stuff. And we say, this is me, you see. And Baba says, what are you talking about? This is your disguise. And it's so good that you don't even see who you are through it. And so you take it to be real. And you see, you know. So there is this expression in India that I find quite interesting about the peacock. You know, the male peacock who's got this bright blue neck and red eyes and big tail and all the things, and he dances and everything. And he is very proud of that. You see him strutting. We say strutting like a peacock. And then he looks down and he sees his chicken feet and cries. You see. So I think that we sort of occasionally will get ourselves in that situation where we flip between our imagined, oh, I am the Lakshmi and Narayan, and let me see if I can find my Narayan or my Lakshmi, you know, who would look good with me in the golden age. And then we look down at the reality of ourselves at this time, and there's no way, you know. It's so far apart. But as an 84-birth soul, the contrast between the height of our golden aged stage and the depth of our iron aged stage is gigantic. And part of what we have to do is span the distance and become large enough in our drishti towards our own self to be able to encompass our greatness and our lowliness and integrate those. You see? Because another thought that I found quite useful, I came up with this idea, the soul has four things, not three. It has mind, intellect, good sanskaras, bad sanskaras. Four. If you say it has mind, intellect, sanskaras, that's true, but then people keep on telling us, including Baba, that you please take your bad sanskaras and remove them. You see? So I thought about this for quite some time. I said, well, you know, sometimes you look at yourself and you say, well, I didn't have any bad sanskaras. He must be talking about somebody else. So that's okay. I only have good ones, so I'm fine, you know. We deceive ourselves in that way, or we have lower standards, or however we want to put it. But, you see, the Gyan says that the soul has golden, silver, copper, iron, sanskaras, 84 births, you know, Brahmin, deity, Kshatriya, the Savation, Shudra, and then again Brahmin, then again deity. So, you see, if you take your copper age and iron age sanskaras with some kind of cosmic razor blade and slice it down the middle and throw it into some deep dungeon and to remain kalpa after kalpa, you can't do that because the soul is indivisible. So when he says change your sanskaras or remove your bad sanskaras, it is inaccurate to interpret it like this, that we have to cut ourselves in half and throw half of ourselves away, because then we would only be half a soul, which you can't get. I am a half a soul. Doesn't fit. I'm half peaceful, half loveful. In practicality is we are half peaceful, half peaceless, half loveful, half hateful, half powerful, half weak. This is the reality. And so we have to integrate and accept the good half of ourselves and the bad half of ourselves. So I thought one way to look at it is this, that we can't remove our old sanskaras, but we can make them dormant. So they are effectively inoperable. You see. So I thought, okay, all I have to be is soul conscious. Because when I'm soul conscious, then my loveful, peaceful, powerful, pure, and blissful self is my reality. And my five vices are not there. And in fact, if you become philosophical about it, Maya actually means something that isn't there. So if you say, I have Maya, you're actually saying, I have something that's not there. So then you say, I am upset about the fact that I have something that I don't have. Doesn't make sense. This is why Maya is called illusion. So another little image that I created for myself in this process is just a simple balance, you see. That if you're meditating at the rate that Baba has told us as basic requirement, 108 hours a month, 3.5 hours a day. You know that, right? Then we can keep our negative emotions or five vices under control. Because we have enough power of yoga power to keep the balance stable. Anything we do more than that, the balance of positivity is going to go further down, and we want eventually to reach a point where there's so much power accumulated in the self, so much experience of application of the different powers, virtues, drama point, all of this, that you stay naturally soul conscious. And so there may be something that would come to provoke you, but it will only succeed in provoking you if you were weak. So Baba said in the Murali today a quite nice thing that you probably must have experienced, that if a person's weak, they can hardly lift up a glass of water. It's very heavy, you know. Person strong, picking up a couple of buckets of water is a game or just play, you see. So it just depends on whether you're weak or strong. When you're soul conscious, you're strong. When you're body conscious, you're weak. You're susceptible. And then even if you know all the knowledge in the world, you can't actually do anything about it because you don't have the power to apply it. And then of course there's no question of putting on any wings of enthusiasm and zeal. So I think that probably, just to be very, very practical about the whole thing, you have to give priority, that I must be very careful not to allow myself to get depleted, to get tired, so that my yoga goes down. But of course Maya says, well, I have a lot of ways to get you to get tired, weak, lonely, angry, all these things. And then the negative sanskaras come out, and the depressive feeling starts happening, and you go down. So I think the desire for a high is a dangerous thing, because it gets us into a position where we start doing things which will make us tired. We don't have to do. And it's because this I consciousness comes in. So I think it's very key to create this cocktail of this sense of being an instrument, invoking Baba, and reminding oneself all the time, Baba is always with me. Baba is getting his work done however he wants, and if I have a different idea, it doesn't actually make any, it's not relevant to the subject, so put that down. And my job is to keep my levels up, that is my levels of peace, purity, power, love, and bliss. And then any happiness that comes along, that's nice, but it's not my essential original qualities, you know. And these essential qualities are sustained and filled and grown by the time spent with Baba. Now, of course, he has said there's no time now to spend time for yourself. And he gave us this drill, which is a very nice one to do. He said, in between, through the day, practice. I am the Maryada Purushottam, highest Brahmin. Establish your position. Whether anybody likes it or not doesn't matter. Truth is, I am the highest Brahmin. From there, go into the Avyat stage. From there, the world benefactor stage, and extend good vibrations. Om Shanti. So when we practice this drill, it's very good for this flying stage because you're doing a very specific thing. First, you're establishing your confluence aged self-respect, which is an extremely positive mental attitude. Second is you're entering into a subtle stage which is out of reach of body consciousness. And third is you're donating from your huge treasure, which means that you are receiving. And so it's a very powerful instruction that Baba is giving us. And he says, even if you can't do anything else, and sometimes you just can't, do this and it's very good. And whatever you can do, keep doing. Now, I believe that many of you are leaving tomorrow, isn't it, or today? And so the question arises, you know, okay, now I've had a nice time in Madhuban, I'm all filled up. How can I maintain this when I go back? Do you have this question? And so I think it's a good question to look at, because this place has extremely powerful vibrations, which we ride on and we feed on. But we also, at the same time, have to make sure that we are actually absorbing into ourselves enough so that we can actually sustain ourselves on that for the next year, because many of us, we come once a year. Few of us come twice a year. But we also have to be very sure that I am a Madhuban Nivasi, right? My permanent address is Brahmakumari's Mount Abu, India, with or without visa, nothing to do with it. This is my other home, holiday home, Paramdham. Right? Because sometimes you just think that, oh, I don't have anywhere to go. You can always go to Paramdham. You don't require an airplane or anything. It's actually a very good one. Oh, I'm going home. Sorry, see you. And go to Paramdham. It's nice there. Very nice. And then wherever you happen to be is a service station. And so there is some duty that we have to perform. So I remember while I was in L.A., I created a policy for myself which worked quite well. Because, as you know from experience, on any given day, sometimes you may have like tons of people and massive programs, and it's way more than you can handle, but anyway you do it. And then there are other times when nothing going on. Everything you try doesn't work, and you end up sort of twiddling your thumbs for the whole day. Have you experienced that? So I think that, and this is also one of the sort of traditional Hindu beliefs, that every moment of time has its own speciality. And so there are periods of time that are very active, and there are other periods of time where it's as if time itself is not allowing you to do anything. And so then at that time we have to recognize, okay, this is not a time to do anything, this is a time to be still and just meditate. You know, and then we say, well, yeah, I always used to create a sort of hierarchy of different things I could do for service, because I thought to myself, even if there's absolutely nothing to do, I will have some kind of service that I can do in reserve, so there'll never be a day where there isn't any service. And so you can create things for yourself like that. There's always things that have to be done. And when you encounter a day when there's nothing at all that you can do, then create a nice, good schedule for your mind. And in between, do things that normally you never get around to. Keep them written on the list so you don't forget them, because otherwise if you never get around to something, the only time when you can do them, you forget that they're available to be done. So there's that. And practice this drill, because as we move closer and closer to the destruction time, you know, a lot of people talking about destruction. We don't have to tell anybody about destruction. It's all over the newspapers, the internet, the television, and so on. So we have to absorb vibrations and powers from Baba and radiate them. And this is essential, because there are, I think there's probably more than 80% of the people of the world who are at any given moment experiencing extreme distress. Could be emotional, could be financial, could be physical, could be psychological, could be any of the things, but extreme distress. And when a person experiences extreme distress, it's a feeling. And relieving that feeling can be done by a vibration. So many of us have experienced, when we sit in front of Bap Dada, there's a vibration, and it comes along and reorganizes all the bits of our soul, isn't it? And sets it up nicely. It's only a vibration. And Baba's asking us to do that. Establish a vibration that makes things be nice and makes things fall into place. And so that if you feel okay, it doesn't matter what bad is happening, but you feel okay. So it's okay. If you don't feel okay, even if nothing that bad is happening, it's still awful because you don't feel okay. All your parts of yourself are out of order, or not harmonized. So doing this for ourselves, creating this vibration and exuding this and extending it, so that anybody who is touched by that wave somehow feels, oh yes, now I can do it, or now I can bear it, or now I can die, or now I can live. You know, these very, very subtle things. It's a very good form of service, you know. Anyway, we have a few minutes, and I'd like to give you time to ask any questions, if you have any. Take that, yes.
Hello, my name is Brother Tim from Melbourne. I'd like to know, how much does the truth have to do with facts, and how much does it have to do with faith?
A very nice question. And everybody heard that, right? From Brother Tim. I'm reminded immediately of a thing that Baba said quite a long time ago. If you tell the truth with anger, it's not the truth anymore. Because people don't pick up what you said, but they pick up how you said. So there's that particular thing. And I am very interested in this thing called truth at the moment. I am working in a project called Value Education, and in that we do dialoguing. And the process of dialoguing involves following certain rules of structured conversation, which we call no gas. That means no generalizations, no accusations, no speculation, and no speeches. We hate speeches, right? That means whatever you say about any given subject, it has to be true. It can't be a generalization, because there's always some exceptions. Any generalization is false right there. If it's an accusation, then it's, you don't have the right to accuse somebody. So it's not true in the sense that you're exceeding your rights. And speculation is always going to be false. So that's also not true. And speeches are always, you know, they're not real. Yeah? They're just, intellectualization most of the time. That's why we don't like them. And if somebody is telling something that really strikes home, you will never call that a speech. Yeah? Speeches is for boring things that people say that are full of that generalizations and all. So applying these rules and sticking very carefully to the topic causes the very subtle and deep truth about that particular matter that you may have selected to discuss to reveal itself. And then it is something you feel. And somebody will say something and everybody just, that's the truth. Yeah? That's very powerful. So it's not quite about faith, but I think it's more about invoking it. The truth is sometimes called very modest, and it hides itself. And we have to be very respectful in order for it to show itself. So it isn't anything to do with facts, because as soon as a truth is understood, it's history. The facts. And it's true that this is a glass of water, but so what, you know? What difference does it make to anything? So facts, in a sense, doesn't matter. Or you said this, and it was bad. It was only bad because you took it badly. You know, what's bad? It depends. So truth, to me, is this hidden thing that we have to try to get it to show itself to us. And when you have seen something true, I suppose the other thing that I'm reminded of is this expression that somewhere in the Bible, be still and know that I am God. Because when you're still enough and you kind of apprehend Baba for a moment, it's like you touched the truth, but only for a moment. Then it has a way of hiding itself again. So I think that we're really working on quite a subtle level. I remember one thing also that I think is probably relevant to this. Baba had told us at the last Murli of the last season, would you please stay away from good and bad, right and wrong? And that struck me. That's very important. Because I suppose one of the things we could say, the Western intellect is very fixated on it's right, it's wrong, it's true, it's not true, it's evolution, it's devolution, whatever it is. But we make it fixed. And what I have found, especially with these dialogue things, is truth is more like a slight feeling that arises, that you apprehend, and it shifts you, and then you carry on, but everything is different. And you were less false than you were, and more true than you were. So you're on a kind of journey where you're trying to become real, authentic, genuine. And there are many things that are true that are made out to be false, but somehow it's very necessary in order for another truth to emerge, which is an even higher truth, which makes that lower truth into something false by comparison. See? So I find a very interesting question and something very deep for us to think about. Please, yes. Come up and speak on the mic, or nobody will hear, including me.
Okay, just
tell your name and place.
Bimla from New York. Just touching back on the topic of truth, and just came to me the thought that there's often said that truth can never be hidden. It's interesting from what you say that it has to come out. And, you know, in many of Dadi's classes, going back to the Yagya language, truth, when you have truth, you dance. So such the bit too much.
That's not your regular language. This, I will tell you, do you know the story of being the truth will dance? If you have the truth, you will dance? It's so good story.
Not that I can
tell you that okay, story.
No, that's truth and not being hidden, and you know, that it'll stand out no matter what you do, you can't hide it.
So, nice story. It's a Sindhi story. There was a businessman, and he wanted a secretary who he could trust with lots of money and things like this. And so he devised a way to test the applicants. And so what they had to do was to walk through a tunnel which was completely dark. And in this tunnel there was tons of diamonds. And so it was very dark, but sufficient for a person with a good eye for it to see that there's something here I can put in my pocket. And so all the applicants went through the tunnel, and then at the outside the tunnel on the other side, he says, okay, now you please dance. Because if you dance enthusiastically, your diamonds are going to jump out. And so they'd have a few people dancing a little bit, you know, and then he knew that they were not the trustworthy ones. But there was one who was very enthusiastically dancing. He hadn't picked any up. So he selected that one. And so there's these other expressions, and the Lord is pleased with the honest heart. And what is it? There's another one. These are all Sindhi expressions to do with honesty. And so our body consciousness is untrue and aligns itself or gravitates towards different aspects of being untruthful, corrupt things. Huh? And so we want to be pure, true, real, genuine, authentic. And I think also, for many of us, we would add at any cost. And very often the cost is you don't look very good, or somebody accuses you of God knows what, and it looks like you've done it, and everybody says, yes, clearly, this one is like this, and you're not. But it's also said in the Yajna that the truth does not need to be proved. And so I remember finding all these things extremely interesting and experimenting with, you know, if ever there's a false accusation, if you try and prove it, people are so fixed in the idea that if you try and prove it, you're definitely wrong. So forget about that. Do not try and prove it. Sooner or later, if you have enough patience, either everybody will forget whatever the accusation was, so it didn't happen, or it will be seen. And so you don't have to say anything. Nobody has to say anything. It's very discreet. It's very elegant. But the truth prevails, which is the motto of India. Satyameva ki jayata. Sanskrit. And so so we have to have faith in that. So in that, what Tim was saying, faith that the truth has power is a very important part of our stability and solidity as divine human beings. The boat of truth, yes, the boat of truth will... be ready. Baba has warned 3 times or 4 times in this last murli, something is going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to be ever ready. Could be anything. I mean, whatever you think it's going to be, it's not going to be that. It'll be some other thing. And we think all sorts of things, but it's not any of that. Something else. Yes, please. And this can be the last one, then we'll have some meditation and conclude.
The name of this body is Dixon. I'm from Nigeria. I'm sorry, I'll take just a minute to give one little analogy. We all know that white is white anywhere in the world. Any place you show them, they say, this is white. When I came into India, I found out that they have this right-hand side of driving. So, right-hand side driving this way.
Yes.
Using left to put the gear and then...
Right.
In Nigeria, we drive the other way around, using right to put the gear. So, in Nigeria, driving this way is right.
Mm-hmm.
But in India, driving this way, it's right.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask two questions. One is, what is the difference between truth and what is right? The second question is, what is truth?
We're very, very interested in truth, aren't we? There's something else that I have learned in India that perhaps we could add to this pot that we're brewing here, the pot of truth. Which is a kind of contrast between what's currently known as the Western way and then the Indian way. And in the Western way, for want of a better way to put it, we are quite focused on the facts. And if the facts are the facts, then they're the facts, and that's what it is. In India, not much interested in the facts. But we want to keep good relationship at the expense of the facts, if necessary. And the reason, or the sort of philosophical motive behind that, is these physical facts, they appear, and then after some time they disappear. But relationship is a lifetime thing. And so, in India, much higher priority is given that if you have to lie, cheat and steal, but keep the relationship, because that's more valuable than any amount of physical items or lying or any of that, you know. And so a person who's coming from the Western perspective will say, well, that looks rather unethical to me. You see, but so again, it's something I think we have to sit with and see, what is this thing, you know, which gives highest priority to relationship, and then add to that, Baba says, look, you know, I am all relationships. And even a few days ago in the Murli, somebody had said, Baba, I have to lie in business. And Baba says, yeah, business is like that. What's the big deal? You see, so you have to think. Truth has to do with maintaining a relationship. You have to maintain a relationship with yourself. You have to be true to yourself. You have to maintain the unity of the family. I'll give you another little analogy that Dadi Prakash Muni, when I started being a Madhuban Nivasi here, she brought me up on stage for some reason, and she said, here is a pomegranate. You know, you get pomegranates every so often, like apples or whatever. And she said, Denise, do you know what a pomegranate is? I said, no, what is a pomegranate? She said, well, there are departments in a pomegranate, little white sections. And inside there are the little seeds in small little bags of juice. And some of them are good, and some of them are bad. But we're all one pomegranate. So this is how to be a Madhuban Nivasi. In other words, you have to accept whoever's good and whoever's bad equally, and not mind. So I have another little mantra that I use, you know, if somebody's being absolutely bad and awful and blah, blah, blah. And I say, you know, you have a full permission to play your part however you want to play it. not my problem. I really don't care if somebody's good or bad. But, you see, if somebody lies to me, it doesn't matter that they lied to me. What matters is, did I pick it up or not? You see. If somebody starts suspecting me of something, did I give them any grounds to do that? And then by using such an approach, which is what I do, all of the blame for anything, I'll send it back to me, you see. And if something goes wrong, well, I had to have been more careful. Or I had to have been more aware, or I had to have been less in a rush, or whatever the thing is, you know. Send the blame back to the self, then it's very natural, very normal to remain free from waste thoughts or negative emotions and maintain a continuity of respect for all the different people who are within the pomegranate, because we live together as a pomegranate, we die together as a pomegranate, and you don't open the pomegranate and throw away the bad ones, because it's not a pomegranate anymore. It's little individual beads. So, this is how Dadi Prakash Mani has said, you know, this is, the world is with all kinds of different people, and if we become fanatic about something, then it creates a world of kind of people divided against each other, an adversarial world. And what we're trying to have is an integrated world where we accept everyone, because whether somebody's good or bad or indifferent, they're fixed for every cycle forever, that they will be a Brahmin, they will come to the golden age in whatever status it happens to be, we never know. And our duty, what Baba has given us, is respect everyone. And do not take the law into your own hands. Do not judge a person or condemn a person or criticize a person, because whether they're right or wrong is one thing. But if you are doing that, that's a negative karma. So it goes in your minus department. So, if you look at it another way, which I also use for myself, is you're the only one who's there, in the middle, and everything that you can see and hear and feel is three-dimensional wallpaper. It's just a scene. And it really doesn't matter what is in it. What matters is, am I real? Am I authentic? Am I stable? Am I in my elements of purity, peace, power, love, and bliss to the maximum extent? And am I communing with Baba? And this then becomes the foundation of ethics. Okay, I think I have to stop because it's past 12:30. And so we'll have a few moments meditation. Om Shanti.